Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. How are you doing, sir?
Well, I was feeling good, feeling great, happy to be here, excited to be here. However, peel the curtain back, and thank you once again, Dunkers, for embracing your bounce. To peel the curtain back, I was excited, I was singing, I was getting hyped. I was playing the song the Mets closer uses. I was ready to go. I opened this link, and this man, Nikias, is in full Manchester United regalia off of 1-2-1 win. This man's got a whole Chevy. He's got a Chevy logo, tats. It's crazy. Were you at the protest before the game? What's up? The hashtag was Big Mad.
Hashtag glazes out, but
all right, see, this is not going to be a peaceful pod. I have concerns after this weekend. We got blowouts, we got the Wings being the Wangs and then being the Wings, the Liberty season. Someone hit me with a Liberty off season hashtag.
I
got mad apologies to give. I'm all over the place, man, but
a lot happened. I guess
Nikias is yelling at the W.
What do you mean? I have scheduled thoughts, but like that's a whole, you know, we can get into it.
Nikias, we are going to get into it because you had scheduled thoughts the entire weekend. Well, just to also peel the curtain back, this man was yelling at Little League World Series baseball players just to give you a live look.
I don't know if that's a fair representation. I just wanted the game to end so we could switch over to the playoff game. That's it. I had nothing bad to say about the children involved. Just wanted the game to end. You know, it was like 7-3. I think the worst thing I said was like, y'all had six innings for this to not be the deficit.
Nah, man. It was 7-3. They hit a double, 2-run score, and Nikias goes full Michael Jordan meme.
I don't even know if I had the capacity to go full Michael Jordan meme. At any rate, fun weekend of basketball. The fun depends on who you were rooting for, because we did have some blowouts in that one. Some quick housekeeping. Got to get this out of the way first. Udonis Haslem did announce on Sunday that he will be returning for his 20th season. I feel like my thoughts on the matter have been well publicized over the last seven, somewhere in there. So I don't know if it's worth me rehashing that once again. Steve, do you have thoughts / trolling comments to throw out here?
No, I don't have any trolling comments. Leave Udonis alone, man. It's great. The Heat want him back. He's back. 20 years.
It's a milestone.
Yeah, salute that man for that, man.
That's pretty solid. You know, it's not easy to last in the league 20 years. That's why not many players do it. And so for him to be able to do so, like, that's it's pretty dope for him.
Go on.
Not to go on, Udonis Haslem should be a part of the Miami Heat organization as long as he wants to. I have been consistent on that front.
Okay, but he wants to be a player, and they also want him to be a player.
That would require him to, you know what? Making it 20 years is pretty good. Good for Udonis.
You ever seen someone give a compliment to someone, but they don't actually mean it? You know what to do to those people. You just keep asking questions, and eventually the truth will come out, because they can give you the first one. They can't give you the second one, and they won't give you the third one.
Is that a life lesson from Steve Jones, Jr.?
I mean, apply it where you want. Give us your real thoughts on UD. Who are you mad at that's not playing? Give us the real sauce, man.
I feel like, again, I've been a broken record on this stuff for literal years at this point. Udonis Haslem should be part of the Heat organization as long as he wants to. Udonis Haslem holding a roster spot does not make much sense to me, considering he's played barely more than I have over the past three seasons. But it is what it is. The Heat players love him. Like, Bam in particular swears by him. And he's had many comments over the last couple seasons like, yeah, we want UD back. And if you don't like it, yada, yada, yada. So, like, the players respect them. Their opinions hold more weight than mine. Breaking news there. And so that's just kind of the situation.
So you're gonna are we done? Is this the end of the Udonis Haslem topic on the pod?
Until next offseason, in which we probably run this back again.
All right. Can't wait for the tweet that comes early. Anyway, so what else you got? I'm not gonna hammer the nail here.
There's nothing doing on the NBA front, really. Like, we got another Donovan Mitchell report earlier today. Apparently there was an Evan Fournier, Obi Toppin, multiple picks offer that was thrown out there to the Jazz. And Danny Ainge's like, no, we want 4 unprotected first round picks per reports.
Yeah, man. It's August.
Yeah.
So you gotta be in a state of desperation to make the move that these teams are asking you to move. And I tie this in with not just Donovan Mitchell, with KD. You got to remember, most of these front offices, it's almost time for camp to come back. They feel pretty good about the people that are about to walk into the building. Whether they should or should not, you never know. That story will be told. But at this point in the season, there's optimism. We feel good. We're happy. Let's get it going. New energy, new vibes. So a team that has a set price point, everyone knows what the price point is, but we just got Jalen Brunson. We can at least get 5 games better. I don't need to do all this right now. Same thing with the whole, KD Grizzlies news that came out. # respectfully messy. Shout out to Memphis for being like, hey, like, we're not doing that, but we got these picks.
So this is really what you want. Yeah.
So that one was funny to me. It was a lot funnier than the Boston thing. The Boston thing felt like a little too serious for me. But like, there's no desperation from these teams right this second to meet the price. And there's no reason for these teams to not try and get the price met. I'm not blaming Utah for asking for a lot of Donovan Mitchell.
They should.
You got one chance. You got one chance to do it. So I think we're just going to see a lot of Spider-Man memeing until season starts and someone tries to plug their phone in and that screen is cracked.
Ah.
Ooh, this charger really, it's not charging.
Ah, that's kind of tough.
You ever been in that scenario? We've all hung on to a charger too long or a phone too long. When it just says not charging.
Yeah. I was like, oh, it's like actually not working now.
This is like big it's nah.
It's a sad situation when your phone goes to it doesn't really work like that to it doesn't work. It's like, oh no, this is dire. So now I have to do something. So
while we're here, do you want to talk about the crossover?
We can very briefly. I will just say, as someone that obviously wasn't there, just roaming the timeline and seeing the pictures of the half field. Well, first and foremost, seeing people literally camp out the night before for the chance to see LeBron and Tatum and DeJounte Murray and everyone else that was going to be there. Like, one is dope that players playing in pro-am settings garnered that kind of excitement. But also to then go from that to seeing pictures of the gym being like half empty and people not being let in. And like, that didn't seem very fun. And then the game gets called off midway through the second quarter because of condensation on the court. I hate it for the people that like camped out and couldn't make it, or camped out and got there and were treated to like a quarter and a half of basketball before they had to leave. Like, that just doesn't seem fun. And I think bigger picture, I just kind of wonder with the condensation on the court issue in particular, like, I wonder what that does for like the star level players or the players in contract years coming to these sort of events and playing. Like, are those kind of risks going to start outweighing, one, I just want to play basketball, or two, I want to give back in my own way. I want to connect with the community more and stuff. Like, I wonder how that's going to go into play. And for the people that are planning out these pro-ams, like, I wonder if it's going to become more difficult for them to do so, trying to find venues that won't have these kind of issues. That's really all I have on that.
Oh, well, you went full serious. I had one question on this topic, but all right, let's talk about ahead. I feel bad for Jamal Crawford because the crossover has been great and usually goes off without a hitch. And to finally get that kind of buzz, get that kind of excitement, folks finally being able to see that level of talent together. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't just LeBron. Like, Jason Tatum was there. Eric Gordon, all the Seattle folks, IT yeah. was there. And for that to just kind of end like that, that's tough. But there's a balance with the authenticity, because players could play and it could be on TV, but it's cool to kind of see them at these kind of events, kind of ground roots type stuff. So, I mean, for me, there's always going to be a balance, because there's dudes who want to hoop and there's dudes who are going to hoop. And in this day and age, you can put a gamer anywhere. And if they're going to stream it, put it on the app, seems like a plus for everyone. Well, at least, I mean, if y'all doing it, we're going to show it. So, you know, this is what it is. Big thing is, I just want no one to get hurt. That's all I want. Turn all injuries off. Do whatever you want. Go turn them off. Can I be respectfully messy for a second?
Yes, you can.
Where do you think the man in the red who tried to dap LeBron up and his pregame dunk, where do you think he is right now?
Purgatory. I don't think we will hear or see him ever again. I have never seen so many people spawn in the same.
Yo, I wish I put the clip up on the bird app. I wish I had not cut it off, because they was walking through the layup line. Like, I felt bad for whoever was next about to go for a layup, because there was about seven people in that way.
Also, it's just like, man, like, act like you've seen basketball players before at a certain point.
I don't think that's fair. Because that's LeBron James right in front of you. But also, that's LeBron James right in front of you. You have LeBron James right in front of you. That's the win. You don't have to do anything else.
That's all I'm saying.
That's a massive W. Like, you are that close. Woo! Keep your energy right here.
You already got your phone on you. Like, take the picture or the video. Like, that's all you need. Why are you trying to... At bare minimum, just hold the hand out. And if LeBron runs by and daps you up, dope. And if he runs right past you, that's also dope. That's something you can get retweets on Twitter about and get laughed at. Don't step forward and try to, again, like, he's going for dap. He ain't trying to tackle LeBron or anything crazy. So we don't need to make it anything it wasn't. But, like, don't. Just don't. Don't do that. And then you don't have to be taken to unknown places if you don't engage in that behavior. Just don't do that.
Yeah, I got you.
Hashtag you can't do that.
Speaking of uncharted behaviors,
let's flow into the Chicago Sky's Game 2 victory over the New York Liberty, forcing a Game 3 that will be shown Tuesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern.
All right, very quickly, I'd like to issue a quick apology to the city of Chicago, Candace Parker, James Wade, Courtney Vandersloot, Emma Meeseman, Azrae Stevens, Kalia Copper, Allie Quigley, among others.
Among others.
I'm sorry.
Wow.
Accountability is important. I got to take my L. I'm here for it.
Man.
Talk to me however you want.
Well, I won't be talking disrespectfully. I will say it was very apparent early on that the Chicago Sky were not here for any shenanigans.
Early on? Let's rewind a pregame. Did you see the look in Candace Parker's eyes?
I did. You made a comment during the watch party. Like, I don't like how this looks.
Not at all. From warm-ups, they're about to go for the tip. She huddles everyone again. I'm like, oh, buddy. All right. Also, side note, we got to circle back to the James Wade Colleen
Copper. Yes, we do.
Hey, man. Hey, save it for free throws. But actually, no, I'm going to be respectfully messy before we get to the analysis. That was a rope-a-dope. And I don't appreciate it. I'm going to say it right now. Hey, twist your ankle real quick. We're not going to say nothing about it. And then you're going to full court pressure Sabrina Ionescu and go nuts in the first quarter. All right, that's unfair. Back to the Sky start.
Oh, we are here tonight.
Nah, she was Kalia Stopper in that game.
Yeah.
Golly.
Yeah.
Back to that. We talked about the importance of what Chicago did. Their defense was insane. And you don't need deeper analysis. You literally could box score analysis that one and get that. But if you dive deeper towards it, we talked, hey, what is this guy going to do? What's it going to look like? Should this guy play this way? And I believe James Wade, as you mentioned, was like, hey, they didn't feel us. And boy, in game two, did they feel it. The Sky doubled down defensively. We talked about how the Liberty exploited the Sky's hedges and shows and pre-rotations, and they found something. And the Sky looked at them and said, cool, fine. We'll just do this a lot better. It's okay. That's a massive key. Like, you take what wasn't automatic for the Liberty and turn that into a problem while also being good at everything else defensively.
Yeah.
Like, what are you supposed to do with that? Like, they sent a message right from the jump, if I recall correctly. I want to say the Liberty started the game trying to get Sabrina going off the ball. Coppers right into her, pushes her off the screen. They get the catch. Natasha Howard screens. It's empty side, pick and roll. Pet peeve alert, Nikias. Natasha Howard rolled toward the three defenders, but don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Candace Parker, if you remember in game one, Dolson was hitting threes because Candace Parker was roaming. Candace Parker was trying to get to the rotation. I promise you, Candace Parker was playing center field off Dolson. She met Natasha Howard at the elbow. At the elbow. That's one step off that screen. She was already there. Emma Mieseman showed against Sabrina and was already rotating to Stephanie Dolson. And then they set another pick and roll, and Emma's right there in position. And they were helping rotating. Like, the Sky's defense is very good. When they hit those notes and they're excellent at team defense and they're flying around and they're being physical, what do you do? They threw the Liberty in the mud.
Didn't, like, mush the head down while they were in the mud.
Nikias.
What's up?
Nikias, why you do that?
I'm just going off of what I saw on Saturday. We talked about game one and how important it was for the Liberty, one, to handle the pressure that Chicago threw out, but two, take care of their business, take care of the ball. The New York Liberty committed their first turnover in game one, like midway through the second quarter. Where'd they have 7 or 8 turnovers? They just didn't have it. And it got to the point, like, it's one thing if Chicago's playing defense well and the Liberty are settling for tough shots. Like, early portion of that game, the Liberty just could not run offense, period. They could not get shots up, either with shot clock violations or live ball turnovers. Or dead ball turnovers, throwing the ball out of bounds. They could not offense. When the Sky hits that level, I'm with you. I don't know what you do. And one thing I mentioned during the watch party, we can talk about it a little bit here. Like, one, Chicago did double down with their scheme. I think it was a little bit easier for them to double down with those aggressive, with the hedges, and more importantly, that the pre-rotation behind that to be in position to stop that roll and stuff. I worry about the Crystal Dangerfield spot for the Liberty. It went from we're sagging off of her in game one to we're not guarding her in game two. And I just wonder if there is an obvious adjustment to be made versus just play better or play with more pace or play with more focus. Like, I wonder if that's going to be the adjustment for Sandy Brondello. Like, we already saw a game two adjustment in Dallas, and Dallas, we'll get to that shortly. But, like, I wonder if Sandy Brondello's like, okay, maybe we can't start with that because it allows Chicago to dig in early. And maybe it won't be as big of a hole as it was in game two, but, like, we can't afford to have a slow offensive start in game three.
I don't know if I put that all on Dangerfield, though.
No, I mean, it's not all her fault, but that stood out to me when going back and watching.
I mean, I could see if she made the decision to make the shift. Are you just going to do not play her?
I don't even think it's not play her. I just don't know if you can start her. But I think there's a way to stagger it in. I worry about the hot start from Chicago. Like, we've made jokes this year about Chicago starting off slow and then kind of getting it rolling. Mm-hmm. It's a whole different thing if Chicago's jumping out to the 14-2 lead.
No, yeah. For me, it's you kind of need Dangerfield to set the table in a sense so that now you can get to not having to use Sabrina all the time and spam on ball. And so I think that, again, I could see if it happened, but I think Sandy likes what she brings to that unit on both ends of the floor. Mm-hmm. It may not be a very long shift, but I'm still in that camp.
Okay, I got you.
Because for me, just thinking coaching wise, okay, let's say we start. Who do we start first off? And then secondly, where do we go from there? Because if we're saying, if we're giving you the nod and say, hey, this doesn't work, and then this doesn't work, and we got to go back to that.
Mm-hmm. Not many places to go.
It's one of those type deals. But I mean, for me, the Liberty just, it never felt like they had their rhythm and their poise and their flow. Like, this is a series, if they can't score, they're not going to have a chance. And it felt like once they didn't have those automatics, they were just in scramble mode. It was just, well, let's try and drive here. There's no drive there. you know, it's pick and roll's not working. Let's try. Like, there wasn't a mix. The off-ball movement was there. They didn't have the variety that they had in game one. And I think, again, I credit the Sky's defense for that. Like, we could talk about the aggression from the Sky all day, but they were way more nuanced defensively. Like, they were active but smart. Like, you mix in your hard shows. You mix in flat shows. You maintain your base, your help, your coverage, so that now the Liberty have to think. Like, there's no automatics on each possession. It is, you're thinking, is the drive here? Is the skip there? Is the pop there? Is the roll there? And the ball movement that the Liberty need to have success, A, period, B, against the Sky team, just wasn't there. So I think it's a group deal. How much would you feel differently if these game one and game two results had been flipped or no?
Would I feel differently? And I probably shouldn't, but like, I think I would. Because if Chicago jumped out with that in game one, it's just like, okay, well, this is who the Sky are. This is what they can do. And then if the Liberty respond with, okay, this is what happens when we execute, yada, yada, heading into the Barclays game three. Yeah, I'll feel better about the Liberty here. Like, the note still, I mean, the path still exists for them. But I don't know, man. Like, that first quarter from Chicago was, that was loud.
Oh, extremely loud. Like, this is the issue. As you mentioned, it's one thing to not make shots. It's another thing to not be able to create shots. If the Liberty are going to land in that zone, the Barclays isn't going to be very happy in game three. But you got to take the mixture of those two games. Okay, we know we can do it. We also know what happens when they turn it up. Mm-hmm. And now you make the adjustments to that. That's the fun of the playoffs. And I know you're a big fan of the five-game series. It's kind of the intrigue with a three-game series to me. You have to put your cards and your deck on the table in a speedy fashion. Like, very quickly. Or else you're going home. And you got to come up with a counter. So now, yeah, this guy knew everything Liberty were going to do. They took that away. Now, Liberty have the tape. They know what the Sky are going to try and do. Can they make the counters?
Oh, boy. I guess if you're the Liberty, I guess what beyond play better, is there anything you would like to see them do differently from a scheme perspective on either end?
I mean, play with more tempo in the half court. You've got to have more ball movement. You got to take more cracks at the Sky defense. As good as they're rotating, you have to keep them rotating and then continue to play with purpose once you get them in rotation. So it's positive. They're going to rotate. Can you keep them there? And can you create a look out of it? You know, if you're starting your set with 18 on the clock and now it's kind of bogging down, they're getting into you. Can the ball move quicker? Get from option A to option B to option C. Don't keep the ball on one side of the floor. Use some more back cuts if they're going to be physical and deny your handoff actions or anything like that. And just get back to your flow so that you are, again, a moving target. If you stick with the base, hey, this pick and roll works because they're rotating, that's fine, but predictable. And again, when the Sky are able to know what you're doing and dig in like that, it makes it tough. But, you know, try and find some space for your ball handlers, take care of the ball. And probably, you know, they're going to have to, again, tighten it up defensively. That's another part of it. It's not just the Sky's defense. When that Sky's defense turns into points on the other end, you know, you've got to get them back into the mud to a degree. Doesn't help when you're turning the ball over the court and missing every shot. And they're able to get in transition. But a defense, if you can kind of get your paws on them a little bit, it makes it a little bit different.
And to that point, one, a couple of quick stats. Like, quietly, Chicago blitzed New York. They didn't shoot well from three either. 6 of 22 for Chicago. So it's not like they were just blasting it. It was in transition. And to that point, 20 fast break points for the Sky, 5 for the Liberty in game two. That's not going to do it. To the defense point, though, one thing that you noted in game one, and we both kind of hit on during the watch party in game two, the ball screen coverage from the Liberty, particularly from the perimeter defenders. In game one, it was a lot of going under, ducking under Courtney Vandersloot, ducking under Allie Quigley and getting reattached there and contesting shots. A lot more fighting over in game two, which opened up some drives, opened up some more kicks, allowed Chicago Sky to play with a little bit more flow in the half court. I do think it's going to be important for the ball containment has to be there. They have to do a better job of containing drives. They have to get back to the unders when it makes sense for them to do so and nail those and keep Chicago out of the paint. Because ultimately, that's where they wanted to end up. This is a team that blitzed teams by getting into the paint, mostly via cut with their handoffs and various actions they run there. But if they can't contain the drive, like, the other stuff isn't going to matter.
No, I agree. I mean, we talked about this looking like potentially a Sky turn the corner, get in the paint, draw fouls type game. I don't know if it was exactly that, but to your point, we mentioned the play of Courtney Vandersloot in game one. And I thought in game two, she set a very good tone as far as, okay, cool, you guys are going to go under. I'm going to reject the pick and roll. Boom, I drive. Now you have that in the back of your head. I'm going to fake the reject. Now I'm going to come off the pick and roll. Guess where you have to go? Over. Mm-hmm. And now we get what we want. So anytime the Sky are able to set things up, set those screens lower, get in a position where the under is a little more difficult, or you think about it and they get over, they're able to kind of dictate the pace a little bit. So the Liberty are going to have to get that back into a contained type of deal. Because again, if the Sky ball handlers have it going, what do you do? What do you do?
Pray.
That's what you tell me to do. Tell me to go to church. That's how you feel. All right.
I'm just saying, if you can't contain it, that's what it leaves. That's just what it leaves. Also, just another quick shot to Kalia Copper, who talk about tone setting. She brought it. Knocked down multiple threes in that first quarter. The defense was there. Honestly, surprised we didn't see more of her on Sabrina Ionescu in game one, but saw plenty of her in game two. If you want to go box score analysis, 5 shot attempts for Sabrina Ionescu in game two. Because one, they just didn't play much after the score got out of hand. But to the run, the offense point, they didn't give her space to breathe, really.
No, and I doubt we will see that number of field goal attempts in game two or game three, even if that is, even if they have to come in a different variety. I believe the shots will be going up.
They're going to have to. They're going to need a big Sabrina game in game three. While we're on the game three kick, there will be another one. This one will be in Dallas, since the Wings were able to pull off an 89-79 win over the Connecticut Sun on Sunday. But the game wasn't that close until a random 22-2 run late in the fourth from the Sun. The Wings led by as much as 31 in this game. I was at church on Sunday, and I peeped the box score, and I was like, wait, why are the Wings up 22-7? I was like, all right, bet, finish up with church, getting ready to drive home. I checked the box score again. The Wings are up like 20-something. I was like, wait, why is this happening? I finally got to watch the game recording on a Monday night. Finally got to watch the full game earlier on Monday to see what happened. And one, like, just props to the defensive energy from the Dallas Wings. Just from a mentality standpoint, they seem to make Connecticut feel them a little bit more. Beyond that, I guess it kind of has to start with the lineup change, with Tierra McCowan going to the bench, Izzy Harrison starting at the 5. How did you feel about the move?
Hey, I thought it was a gutsy move. Mm-hmm. That's number one. So I want to give Vicky Johnson and the Wings credit for that. When you go through the type of season they've gone through, Arike goes down, you find something with McCowan and Mabry. McCowan's playing at this level. Then that game one happens and you're like, you know what? Let's bring you off the bench. That's not an easy thing to do in a must win scenario. Mm-hmm. But it worked. It's tough because I wouldn't say the Sun matchup is a bad one for her. It just felt like it wasn't one where she could do the things that she had been doing. And so the Wings just kind of had to morph in that way. And so I'm trying to remember, because I like the move.
Okay.
As someone who thought that Harrison just gives them a different aspect, but it also helped McCown more than anything. Because there's a big difference between the post-ups against Jonquel Jones and the post-ups against Breonna Jones. And that stabilized that second unit. But even back to your point and what we talked about with the Wings, like I think first set of the game, they ran a slice to get Harrison in the post. Didn't really work out that well, but they ran the same set the next time down and ended with a pin down from Rita Mabry.
Mm-hmm.
So to your point of the Wings playing with purpose and not just forcing the issue, that allowed them to do a little bit more of that, which leads into some of the success they had from other players. Which I'm sure you're going to note here quickly. Look at the ball movement. Look at the ball movement. You see him dribble handoff. You see him?
That's some good stuff. Just the bounce off of your point very quickly. I like the move for Dallas defensively more than anything, because as we saw in game one, like Tierra McCown obviously got a start. It was Tierra McCown on Alyssa Thomas, and we talked through that a little bit during game one. And I was like, well, it isn't super ideal to have on Alyssa Thomas, but Alyssa Thomas is the non-spacer of the group, and you don't want to have to worry about the pick and pops with Jonquel and most of the things. They can run her off screens too. You don't want Tierra McCown having to deal with that. So Alyssa Thomas would just be the easier matchup there. And that led to more Kayla Thornton trying to defend Jonquel and asking for help from there. And that just ended up opening up some more things. Also, Jonquel just got off to a hot start in the first quarter in game one. We get to game two. This is Izzy Harrison. Now she's at the level or hedging out sometimes in pick and roll. And they're able to cover, take away some of the space from Connecticut's guards. So I think that helps stymie things a little bit. And now you have Kayla Thornton defending Alyssa Thomas. Now all the handoffs and the random actions that she'll go to in the half court, like you have a range of your player defending those. And so that cuts off another outlet for Connecticut in their half court offense. And we've talked about some of the half court, I don't want to say woes, because that might be too strong this season, but some of the half court iffiness that we've seen from Connecticut, despite them finishing so high up in offensive rating this year. They can sputter in the half court sometimes. And when you have Dallas bringing that level of ground coverage, that level of intensity, that level of focus defensively, makes Connecticut think a little bit. Now, to shoot Connecticut a little bit of bail, like there were some easy ones missed in the first quarter. Jonquel missed some, like there were some, they got some shots in the interior early on in the game that normally fall for them, and it didn't. But I do think from a process standpoint, Dallas was more equipped to defend them with Izzy at the five.
So, and yes, they often run through the six offensively. Did you like the usage of Jonquel Jones from the Sun?
It was kind of hit or miss for me, honestly. It felt like they were trying to establish her early, and then it became a very perimeter-oriented ordeal. And the Wings were able to rebound those misses, push out in transition, and it snowballed very quickly from there. And so it just felt like early first quarter, they tried to get Jonquel going. There was a cold spurt. They try again, then large swath of time. Got going a little bit early in the third quarter. But again, the game was out of hand at that point, it felt like. So I don't know, like a more consistent emphasis on trying to get her going. Because even with Izzy Harrison being more mobile and more able to defend those perimeter acts with Jonquel, like Jonquel is still a multifaceted player. Like she still can score on Izzy Harrison or can just score, still score, period. So I don't think they should go away from her as often as they did in game two.
It's just weird. And you, how much trust do you have in the Sun offense? Because for me, that's the thing holding them back from that top tier is you don't know when that's going to happen. The tempo, even going back to game one, the tempo wasn't the best. They were just able to hit their notes, hit their exploits. But to me, you combine some sluggish tempo with, hey, what are we running? You know, one action, is there a flow to the next? If you get a pick and pop with Jonquel and now she's searching, now it turns into a handoff with Alyssa Thomas, and now you're hoping a high-low develops. Can they hit the pressure points consistently, offensively, to win a game three on the road?
They have the talent to do so. Like, I do worry sometimes the plot is lost. And I think that just kind of comes down to, if you want to just name an area, like, I think the guard play is kind of where it starts in terms of, like, what's the X factor for this team? Because we can talk about Jonquil touches, and I do, Lord knows I do. But, like, ultimately, they have to get Jonquil the ball. Like, Jonquil isn't going to bring the ball up. And beyond that, like, Natisha Hydeman as well, she shot from three this year. If it isn't going, like, it gets a little shaky there. Courtney Williams is very much a bucket, but high degree of difficulty with her looks with the amount of pull-ups that she takes. And she's not a floor general, per se, to help get others involved in that way. Not naturally, anyway. And so if the guards don't have it, and they didn't have it in game two, it can get shaky. And I think that's what we saw. And heading into game three, I think that's the point you land on if you're Dallas. Like, hey, one, we have to execute our stuff. But if we're just looking at individual battles, if we can get the Ty Harris, Veronica Burton, Marina Mabry group, they just match them, we have a good shot. If we can match their production or be more productive than them, we have a good shot. Because we have the versatility of bigs to kind of shuffle in to mix and match to whatever we need against Jonquil and Alyssa Thomas as much as they can. They're obviously talented. But, like, they had the depth to be able to say, okay, Tierra, you're coming off the bench in game two. Because they can do more things. We talked about what Satu Sabally was able to do in game one. She was one of the very few bright spots for Dallas. But the versatility that she can bring. A walk can give you a surge on either end. And so they have enough to mismatch there. The guard battle is kind of where it lands for me.
I understand that. Did you like how the Wings used Thornton and Gray in game two?
I did. Like, Kayla Thornton she's been balling out the last month, really, it feels like. But I really enjoyed the game that she had. Again, defensively, her work on Alyssa Thomas was solid. Alyssa was able to get a couple of tough buckets over her, but just her ability to take away space and also her ability to crash the glass on either end, I feel, goes a little bit under the radar. Kayla Thornton fights. And so she deserves props for that. It's very helpful when she's knocking down threes, which is a dull thing to say. But, like, that's kind of the game, because she has served as a bit of a help point throughout the season for the Dallas Wings. And it's different when the corner threes are going, or like in game two, when she just kind of walks up, knocks down on the ball to break three. It's like, wait, she's confident tonight. Well, today, because it was a noon tip. We're not going to get there. But it's a little bit different when she's knocking down shots from the perimeter as well. She deserves the props. On the Alyssa Gray front, like, I don't have enough time to talk about how good she is defensively. I am intrigued by the playmaking and letting her run some of the offense. I like allowing her to run some empty corner pick and roll. Like, you think of her more as a spacer and someone that can attack a tilted defense, which she can do both of those things. But the playmaking is also kind of there. Like, she has a cool head on her shoulders. Like, she makes good decisions with the ball. And if she's able to help set up a Kayla Thornton that's going and make those kicks there, or more prominently, if she's able to take some of the ball handling pressure off of Marina Mabry so she can run off of screens and get shots that way, and she can attack tilted defenses versus being forced to create everything. Like, that gives them another dynamic in the half court. Also, having Alyssa Gray make the entry pass, like, makes it a little bit more difficult to double Tierra McCowan when they're in together. Just little things in the way they use her. Like, I enjoyed that. It was good stuff from Dallas.
No, that was the big part for Dallas. In game one, we talked about the lack of assists. In game two, I think they had 36 made field goals, 28 assists, 8 from Gray. So there was a balanced team effort. They played with purpose offensively. And being able to use Thornton and Gray off movement, I thought, was big for them, not just to get the production, but also give their offense some balance, give their offense a little bit more of a moving target feel. And I think whenever you can have other players create in these type of scenarios, it helps you. As you mentioned with Gray and pick and roll, that coverage isn't going to be the same. It's not going to be the same as if you're defending, quote unquote, you know, the star player, the person you're trying to take away. So you might have some more wiggle room, might be able to force a rotation they weren't expecting. Now you open some other things up. And I like the fact that it felt like the majority of the things they got came out of the flow, really felt forced with the buckets they got. And then I thought moving Mabry off ball at times was key, especially with how locked in the Sun were on her in pick and roll. So now she becomes a threat. She gets to attack a rotating defense, maybe comes off some screens and is not seeing three defenders right in front. So it was just a good mixture. Now the question is going to be, can Dallas bottle that up and do it again? Because this is where I know some people disagree, but this is where the format gets fun. Dallas should be rocking.
It should be rocking. Like, this is going to be a big game. And honestly, like, Dallas has the home game. Like, Connecticut has most of the pressure here, I feel like. This is house money for Dallas. They're in their house. Connecticut's the higher seed. Like, they should advance. Dallas is also without Arike Ogunbowale still. And we won't see her until, like, if they advance, we may see her game one, maybe game two of the next series. So Dallas is like, we're just going to do our best and see what happens. Connecticut, coming off of the playoff loss they had last year, they have this regular season, and now they're in a win-or-go-home situation against an undermanned Dallas team. With the kind of loss that they've had offensively, like, the brow is raised. And I say that as someone who picked Connecticut in two in this series, because I just didn't know if Dallas is going to have enough offensively. And they found the funk in game two. So now I'm just excited to watch that game, honestly. I guess just to ask you more broadly, is there anything Connecticut needs to do differently that you saw in game two, from game two? Or is it just that we got to play better?
They're firmly into the we got to play better conversation for me, just because the template, I don't think the template changes. I don't think their path to victory changes. They just have to execute. And we talk about margin for errors. It's smaller for the Sun. If their defense raises a whole nother level, probably not having a lot of the conversation. If their offense is just a little bit better, probably not having the same conversation. So it's probably just locking in defensively, getting the wings back into a lack of flow, trying to take one thing off the table and doing enough on the other end to make it work. I would like to see more of a flow, more tempo, more pace. I've been saying that about the Sun for a while now. Yeah. So, you know, they have to find a way to bother the wings, get them into positions that they don't like, get them deep in the clock, and get out a win.
I got you. I would say, like, I don't think there's a major shift that's needed from Connecticut. Part of the 22-2 run that intrigued me, and I kind of wanted to get your thoughts on the run. Like, it doesn't mean anything. It's just in the game randomness or whatever. But, like, it did feel like Connecticut finally started to see, like, oh, wait, like, Dallas is switching a lot off ball. We can probably manipulate this and bang it down low. Like, that's part of the big run Breonna Jones went on in the fourth in particular, just finding those mismatches. Like, maybe that's low-hanging fruit for them to grab in game three. Like, maybe more mismatch hunting or being more intentional about forcing those switches and then playing out of that versus putting so much on Alyssa Thomas to kind of create some things in the half court with her handoffs and the random screening that comes from that. Beyond that, I'm with you. Like, again, they missed some bunnies within the first 2-3 minutes of that game. But after that, like, Dallas just blitzed them, forced a lot of turnovers. They were getting out in transition pretty often. The three ball was falling for them at a very high clip. And Connecticut couldn't knock down shots from the perimeter either. So part of it is just the shots have to fall. But I will say attacking those switches from Dallas might be something for them to be a little bit more intentional about heading into game three.
Okay, who you got, Sun or Wings?
I think the Sun pull it out. I mean, they had to take that one on the chin, but I think they're able to regroup and eke out enough to beat Dallas. I do think it's going to be a pretty close game.
Okay. speaking of close.
Well, there we go. Let's transition to the series that ended over the weekend. We'll go very quickly on Aces Mercury, a 117-80 victory. Most made shots to open the game for the Aces in W playoff history. Most threes made with 23. Most threes made in the first quarter with 8. Most threes made in the first half by 11. Chelsea Gray absolutely lost her mind with 27 points. Made a career high in threes as well. I am again, I just want DeMercury to rest. I think that's where I landed on them. Like, as I was watching the game, I was kind of like, how do I want to discuss this on the pod on Monday? Like, what with DeMercury do I want to dig into? And honestly, I'm just in the place, like, I just want everybody to be all right. There was just so much going on with that Mercury season. I'm glad they finally get a chance to reset. And honestly, that's what ended up spawning the schedule and the playoff format thought more than anything. I'm just like, it would have been nice if the Mercury, if they were going to get sent off, because again, they were missing so much talent. Like, they weren't going to beat the Aces in the series, in my opinion. It would have been nice for them to get the home send off at the very least, after everything that they've endured this year. To get a "we appreciate you" from their incredible fans would have been nice. But again, don't want to go off on the schedule the format tangent tonight, so won't do so. Beyond that...
Oh, you're not going to plug your article?
I did write about the format on basketballnews.com. You can check that out if you would like to support. You can get my deeper thoughts on that whole ordeal. But that's kind of where I land on the Mercury. For the Aces, how are we feeling about the Aces heading into this series against the Seattle Storm, which we'll talk about that a little bit later?
How am I feeling about the Aces?
Yes.
I mean, they're very good.
I mean, yes.
and they have to overcome what teams are going to throw at them, but they're a very talented team. I mean, I didn't get much from this series. They saw the mud, they countered the mud, and they made shots. When their guards are playing at that level, there's not much you can do. When their guards are playing at a level where you can now open up Asia and pick and roll, pick and pop, there's not much you can do. And the same questions appear to me. What are you doing in the fourth quarter? What are you doing against teams going under? What if teams locking on Asia? And can your defense hold up? If they check the boxes, they win. If some of them aren't checked, it's tough tonight.
I got you.
How are you feeling about the Aces going into the second round?
I guess a better way to phrase that would have been like, do you feel like they hit the notes that you would have liked to see them hit during the series with the Mercury?
Some of them, but it's not one of those series you kind of, for me, judge in a sense, because the notes they had to hit weren't as high.
Yeah.
Like, they did hit the notes, but there was an inevitability to it. Now, the tricky part is, do you now transition from that matchup to a matchup that you might feel a lot better about than some teams because of your guard play? That's where my head lands.
I got you. They have played the Storm pretty well. Just heads up, we will go a little bit deeper on the Aces Storm series later in the week. But just confidence level, like, I'm above the concern level at the very least. Like, I would say on a scale of 1 to 10, like 6-ish.
That's a big leap from yuck.
It is a big leap from yuck. I guess I'm more so encouraged by the level of play that Chelsea Gray is at right now, because I think they're going to need a lot of her. They're going to need the bucket getting from her, it seems like. Because I think I'm just giving up hope on the Aces. Just like, they're not going to become a heavy rim pressure team overnight. And so for me, it's like, okay, how good can they be in the short mid-range or mid-range area? Like, can they hit enough of those shots to open things up or just to carry them during those rough stretches? Chelsea Gray has been playing at an all WNBA level for the last month and a half. Well, since the All-Star break, she's been playing at an extremely high level. And again, the made threes were nice to see. And we saw how she turned up towards the end of game one after the hashtag antics that were happening in that game. But Chelsea Gray just has such a command over the offense right now. Like, I worry a little bit less about the Aces half-court offense now, just because I know I don't want it to devolve into Chelsea Sabres a ton, but she's playing at a level in which if she's called upon, like, I trust that she'll be able to get it done. And so I gained a little bit more confidence based on that aspect. I will, if there's concern to be had, like, I'm starting to worry about the depth. They've been playing a playoff rotation all year long, and that's kind of rubbed me the wrong way. But, like, I get it. Now we get to the point where Gierka Hamby is still out. Kia Stokes twisted an ankle, it looked like, in the middle of game two. Ileana Rupair also was lost for the game in that one. And so now I'm just like, wait, who's starting? What are they going to do if Kia Stokes is hurt, or if Ileana Rupair are hurt, or if both of them hurt? Like, do you go play Sants and Asia up front just to kind of keep a big body alongside Asia and transition to a smaller unit towards the end of the season? Like, they did start experimenting a little bit with the Jackie Young at the four lineup that I am intrigued about. Kelsey Plum, Chelsea Gray, they had Raquana Williams out there, Jackie Young and Asia Wilson. Like, I am intrigued to see what that looks like in clutch time if they have to go to that. But that's not a lineup that we've seen a ton of, and that is very small.
I don't think that's the lineup you want to play against that team. It's a lot of post-ups coming, buddy.
Yeah. So that's a that's a concern. So I wonder if they go there. Like, do they? Kirsten Bell has been getting minutes as of late, which is interesting to me. I wonder where that was earlier in the season, but it's neither here nor there. Do you start Kirsten Bell up front with Asia Wilson? So then you can have the big, like a play size to kind of transition into and go to bigger lines if you need to. Like, I just kind of, that's where my mind goes. And again, we'll go deeper into that for the second episode this week. But beyond that, like, they handled business. They shot the lights out in game two. That game was entertaining in the first quarter and then became a mess and a three-point party. They got through it. Didn't have to go on the road. So props to them for that. I just want to see the team healthy. I think that's ultimately where I land with the Aces.
Yeah. Where do you land with the Storm, buddy?
The Storm, I feel a little bit better about. I would say, well, one, an impressive 97-84 victory for the Storm over the Mystics. The offense just couldn't get it done against Seattle in the second half. It just couldn't. They couldn't do it. Also, shout out to Breonna Stewart for not having the best of scoring nights in the first half and then just turning it up in the second half. Also appreciated the different, you touched on this during the watch party, the different ways that they used Breonna Stewart in the half court to open up some things. I guess with the Storm, like, I'm just intrigued with what the offense is going to look like. That's always where I land with the Storm. I know the defense is going to be there. Always curious about the offense. And so when you get, again, you get that Breonna Stewart in the second half, you get the Jewel Lloyd performance, you get the Sue Bird performance, who became the first.
And that's what I was waiting for. Yeah, I wasn't going to say a single word until you mentioned Sue Bird. Only 18-10 in an elimination game. Continue on. I'm listening.
First 40-year-old in W history to drop a double-double. She did it in a closeout playoff game. Very impressive stuff.
You're just going to throw her age out there like that. That's the impressive part, man.
What do you mean?
You're going to ISO the rest of the pod. I think he's beans.
What are we ISOing for? Like, that's literally the stat. Like, she's like one of three players now across the basketball. I think Kareem has also done it on the NBA side. Like, she put herself in very impressive impressive company. That's not shade.
The GOAT. The GOAT.
I'll let you have that for this episode. But no, Sue Bird played very well in this game. And so she also deserves her flowers. Well, I'll let you talk about the Storm. Oh, where's your confidence level on the Storm? What did you like from them in the series? What did you like from them in this game too? What do you think should carry over heading into the series with the Aces?
They played good basketball.
Ah, I see. Quality stuff.
This was an unfair series that should not have been a first round series. But unfortunately it was. What I liked from Seattle was the fact that they just kept digging. They kept countering. Like, it was so fun to watch the start of this game where Seattle takes what Washington was doing and tries to counter it. And Washington does the same thing on the other end. I think for Seattle, it was important for them to find their flow and find their movement. And they got the blend. Game one, they had a lot of people contributing. Game two, it felt like a lot of people were contributing with purpose. And you had Jewel Lloyd going throughout the game. You didn't have to lean on Stewart. You had Sue Bird creating plays and opportunities. You had movement and flow that just put so much pressure on a team. But the Storm don't always hit the right notes. But when they do, it's very tough to deal with. When you have to deal with a pick and roll between Sue Bird and Breonna Stewart, while also, hey, there's a stagger for Jewel Lloyd on the other side, it gets interesting. And I thought Gabby Williams was incredible for them while she played before the injury. I thought Ezzie gave them huge minutes on both ends of the floor. I just thought it was a great team effort. And they're just such a smart basketball team to mix in those actions, to mix in the blend, to hit those notes. It's going to be interesting to see how they do it going forward, because this isn't the best matchup for them. This is the fun part of the playoffs. If I'm the Mystics, I'm hot because we lost. I'm also hot because, boy, we would have had a good matchup the next round.
Yeah.
That's the team we were ready for. We just happened to run into the one team that could keep us from getting there. And that's the toughest part of it. But I was just impressed by the Storm's ability to find it. It wasn't the cleanest offensive game, but they found a way to continue to grind and create baskets, create opportunities. So that was a big takeaway. And their defense, again, simply incredible.
Defense is nasty. I just a small thing on the Storm offense. I really do enjoy, as much as they get in the mud sometimes, I really enjoy the various ways they get into empty corner pick and roll. Like, that's just a fun game within the game that I've been enjoying with them as of late, I should say. So that was fun. To the Gabby Williams point, she was so good in this series. She was everywhere defensively in both of these games, again, before the injury, which still confuses me, because we were having a watch party for this game. We watched the whole game. I do not know when did the concussion happen?
I believe she got elbowed, if I recall correctly.
Like, I just didn't even recall seeing a play with that. But at any rate, she is wildly important to what they're going to want to accomplish during this postseason run. I hope that she is okay. I do think, again, not going to do a schedule rant. The fact that game one is Sunday gives her a little bit of time to recover. We'll see. What did I do?
Just going to keep sprinkling the scheduling in there.
Well, look, man. Because I just want to watch
Sunday, Wednesday, Sunday. They're trying to get two weekends out of the series.
I understand.
Oh, all right.
What does that mean? What did I do this time? I am acknowledging your point.
Yeah. All right, continue.
I can't win with this guy. But Gabby Williams is very important. I will say her absence kind of opened a door for Seattle to play a lineup that I have some intrigue about. Just replacing Gabby Williams in starting lineup with Stephanie Talbot gives them a lot more spacing. And I wonder how that opens the floor up for everyone else. So I am curious to see how that's going to play out with that lineup. How much more of that we see. Will the boost in spacing that they get offensively, will that overcome what they're losing defensively? Because Gabby Williams is a much, much, much better defender than Talbot is. And versatility isn't close there either. So I just wonder what that balance is going to look like. But beyond that, be okay, Gabby. I'm with you. This should not have been. If it was going to be a first round series, I really would have loved for this to be a best of seven, truly, because this is a finals caliber matchup. And the fact that we got in the first round seems to be a sick joke. Washington had a really good season this year. They were the best defense in basketball. A lot of fun stories on this roster. I hated for Shakira to have the offensive game that she had in game two. A sour note to end her season on. She was incredible as a rookie. I would assume Ryan Howard wins rookie of the year, but she's also just a strong rookie of the year candidate as well. I hate that for her. I hate that the Mystic season is ending like this.
Well, I think as we watched that game, part of my reaction was, oh, wait, was game one the offensive game for the Mystics? Was that the peak of the offense from them? And it felt like the start of the game, they looked like they were okay, we're going to attack Sue Bird. And then they kind of did a couple post-ups. And then that was kind of it. And then they were kind of using Elena Deladon off movement with Tina Charles matchup to try and throw some different things out there. But then that was also kind of it. And didn't feel like they got as much. Cloud had a really, I thought Cloud was solid. She had a tough buckets, gutsy effort. but never felt like they unlocked the things where the Storm had to change anything on that. And Ariel Atkins getting early foul trouble. Not good, considering especially how important she was in the start in game one. And the Storm just felt comfortable. I feel like as the game went on, they felt more comfortable defending the Mystics, more comfortable taking things away. That's never a place you want to be. It's unfortunate because, again, these are two really good teams. And the Mystics ending their season that way is tough. But they battled. They were gutsy all year long. They just didn't have enough on the offensive end. And just, to me, it was more about threats. They just didn't have as many threats as they needed to do multiple things. You know, you get 8 threes from Cloud and Atkins, you should be feeling pretty good about things. But
what'd you get from the rest of
it? It didn't bend the Storm's defense, you know. And that's the tough part. I mean, but it's going to be an interesting dynamic, not to go too far, for the Storm side. They were able to kind of hide matchups and help and dig and recover. And now you face an Aces team that, when right and the ball's moving, even when it's not moving, they got bucket getters. They're going to put pressure on your one-on-one defense and your matchups. So that's probably my number one thing I'm looking at.
I got you. I think that's going to be the fun of the series for me, that both of these teams are going to have a little bit of shell shock to a degree. I think for the Aces, like, facing this Storm defense is just going to be different than what they had to deal with the Mercury. And that's even with the Mercury attempting to gunk things up with their zone in particular. Like, the Storm have a zone too. They also have Breonna Stewart and Ezzy Madbigor and Sue Bird as a helper and Jewel Lloyd as a chaser. And if Gabby Williams is back healthy and she's available for the entire series, like, Gabby Williams should make an all-defensive team this year. Like, she's that good. So that's just going to be different. I want to see how the Aces are able to generate shots in game one in particular, just to see, like, what the bounce back is going to be after this little bit of a layoff. And for the Storm, like, their defense was locked in and their defense is just very good in general. It's a little bit different to, hey, we can help off of Alicia Clark if she doesn't have it going. Hey, we can help off of Rui. Hey, we can help off of Natasha Cloud, Dara DeVitas. And to her point, I mean, to her credit, Natasha Cloud hit, what, 4 threes in game two? And so she, you know, they made the dare and she made the shots. They end up losing the game anyway. But it's a little bit different when the spacers are now Kelsey Plum and Chelsea Gray, who's shooting the leather off the ball right now, and Jackie Young, who shot north of 40% for three this year. And if Asia Wilson's space, she's not down threes this year. And if we do get a situation to where Teresa Plaisance is back in the rotation, like, she's not afraid to take shots from the perimeter at all. And so I do wonder how locked in the rotations are for the Storm, or how locked in they're going to be early on in this series. And again, this is, the Aces have played the Storm well all season long. Like, the lone loss was the Tina Charles introduction game. And even that one was a pretty back and forth affair for the most part. So I'm just excited for that one. Again, we'll dig deeper in matchups, lineups, all that good stuff later, but I am excited for Aces Storm. I don't know how excited I am about MVP discourse that's going to flow from that series, but I am excited for the series itself. And with that, do you have free throw questions, good sir?
I have a couple.
Okay.
So with Sophie Cunningham, right?
Hmm?
With Sophie Cunningham, right?
About what? Because you can't leave that open-ended with... About what in particular? Is this in regards to the Tino Charles comment?
Yeah.
I mean, it did open up opportunities for her, yes. I don't know if it had to be phrased like that. Like, that seemed to be... Like, that was very intentionally worded. And once you add in the backdrop of the video of Tina Charles, let's just say her, of Sophie Cunningham being happy that Tina Charles was not on the team anymore. The comments itself wasn't spicy, but, like, the context of all that kind of makes it a little bit spicy. So.
Okay. Who's your shooting guard, Mount Rushmore?
I'm sick. I was going to ask you that. West has been, anyway, MJ, MJ, Kobe, D-Wade, and Jerry West would be my four.
Jerry West, okay.
I'll give West the props.
Who do you have in a game of one-on-one, Ball Don't Stop or Chris Haynes?
Uh, Oh God. See, here's my thing. Like, I don't have a reference for Chris Haynes playing basketball. Like outside, I see one clip of a sidestep jumper from Chris Haynes.
Ask Nelly.
Ah, that's tough. So,
he showed him some country grammar. Oh no.
So like that's all I've seen. And so with that, like
Kid Murillo dilemma.
How many more of these do you have? I'll just let you go. This is good. You're on a roll.
No, that was it.
Oh, okay. Well, see, I know you. I thought you were gonna have like seven straight. I was like, man, this is the Steve Heater that we've all been waiting for. At any rate, I'll say Ball Don't Stop. Like I've at least seen more hoop from him. But I don't know.
Wow. All right. Are you S tier NBA media?
According to Funky Diabetic, I am. Like I appreciate the love. I don't know if I can go there, but I do appreciate the love.
The hashtag is big time. Is Damian Lillard a superstar?
can we? I say if he is, he's on the lower end for me.
You took him out. Take him out in a yes or no question?
What you mean?
You could have easily just said yes. We could have signed off the pod. This man just dove right in.
I just want to give the most accurate answer possible because, like, I view Dame in like that. Dame's in that 9-12 range for me, and like that's kind of on the cusp of the people that I already have is like no brainers. So like I guess here's my issue with that. Since
this is a lot of Pharrell the Eurostep reaction right now, buddy. What is happening? What is happening?
I just want to give my fair answer. Like here, I don't see how Dame is not, but Kyrie is. Like I feel like if one is the like if Dame's a superstar, then cool. If you're saying Kyrie's a superstar, Dame is absolutely a superstar. I think Dame's better than Kyrie. So I guess I don't get how Kyrie would be if Dame isn't. That's mostly where I...
So is he yes or no?
Sure. Yeah, well, yes. He would not be an S-tier superstar.
The hashtag is Big Agenda. Kendrick Perkins, 20 hours ago, Dame Dowla has been a superstar for a minute now. Carry the hell on. It was a trap. That's all it was. You said no, I was going to tie that into your Chris Haynes answer. And if you said yes, I was going to hit you with a Big Agenda. You had no win, and you answered seriously. I wasn't prepared for any of that.
Tremendous. Well, I have one free throw question for you.
What you got?
Who retires first, Udonis Haslem or Diana Taurasi?
Ooh, that's a good question. I'm going DT.
All right.
Go DT. She gives me, I don't want to do this no more vibes at some point. Not now, but just at some point, she'd be like, you know what? Enough for me.
Okay. With that, thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you have not, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. You can find me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can find Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. And with that, we will catch y'all later in the week.
This man really has a whole uniform on right now, folks.